sorry for the delay. I know that there's been a delay a little bit. The ruling party has been trying to sort out its own issues. I really want to apologize for the delay. Good morning, Chair of the Commission. Good afternoon. How are you? Very fine. We are dealing with the amendment bill, with the different amendments that have to come in front of us. This is not the first start of the process. The last time that we have met, you said that we'd really appreciate that the reports that the Commission has put in place in front of the Minister, if they could be ready and be presented to us at an early stage, so that when we deal with the Commission, we have knowledge about what has happened during that particular process. So there is a presentation that the Commission has prepared for us as a portfolio committee. So that report is in front of us. But I must upfront say to members of Parliament, I haven't yet received those two reports that have to be made available to us. So, but I did receive the presentation for today. I must express it upward so that people should know that I'm not seated on the report. I don't have them with me at all. And those reports seem to be very much important to be able to express the position of where do we go from here. So, I don't know. That would be the first part of that the reports are not available, both of them. And if you want to comment about that particular matter, I'll bring it to your attention. So that's the first thing that you just have to clarify about the report itself. And the second part of the presentation is here. I can see the INC has got its hands up there. Can I give the African National Congress an opportunity to say something?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Thanks for working us. But you've just raised a critical matter that you don't have in front of you the report. In fact, you have not received the report that were submitted by the Commission to the Minister. Then in that light, as the ANC, we cannot be able to discuss the presentation that will be made by the Commission. All we can ask is that the Commission can make a presentation and then we don't get into it. We discuss it only after we have received those reports, because I'm made to believe that the recommendations that will be presented by the interim commission are based on that report that was submitted and you haven't yet received. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, the question that you raised concerning the interim reports of the Commission are quite rightly very important issues. Now, at the last meeting, you made the point that you thought it was very important that this committee have the reports. Now, that would have been 8 weeks ago. I'd like you to perhaps just inform us, who was, did you request those reports? When did you request them, and what response did you get? Because I, just to give you background, I have applied for those reports in terms of the, and I'd like the judge to do this. I've applied for those reports in terms of access to information legislation. My application went in on the 14th of April, and I'd like the ministry to sit up and take note. I have not even received an acknowledgement of receipt of that prior application. And I would like the ministry and the secretariat to explain why it is they are not able even to acknowledge receipt of the prior application. It's complete contempt of Parliament and members of Parliament. And I believe that the ministry and the secretariat need to explain themselves, and they need to do it urgently. Chair, I just think my closing comment would be this. I think we should all recognize that the Commission have furnished the Minister with a report. The Commission are, it is not within the purview of the Commission to release that report. It is within the purview of the Minister, and the Minister must now explain himself, and I hope that the Ministry, in the form of Ms. Ellen Mulukhani, are listening and taking some very careful notes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I see that part of our program is also that multiple issues are. If I have it correctly, I see that we are scheduled to meet the Minister next Tuesday. And Chairperson, this is a matter between the Portfolio Committee and the Minister. And I think that is also an occasion that we ask the Minister why doesn't she want to release the report. It is very important that the committee can look into those reports. But Chairperson, if we look at the presentation today of the Interim National Defence Force Service Commission, we must continue with this. Because, I mean, it's today's presentation will be part of the terms of reference. It's only one part. Namely, the recommendations must include the establishment of a national defense force. So that I can't see that we can bring all the people, all the commissioners down to Cape Town. It's taxpayers' money involved in that. And then now we will say, yes, we actually first want the reports. Maybe I misunderstood you on that issue. But that we must continue with this. Let the Commission make a submission, and that we can also ask the Minister next Tuesday what are the reasons. And maybe if you talk to her and you put some pressure on her, she can release the reports before that time. But I think we must separate the two issues, the reports from the Ministry and the submissions from the Commission at this session. Thank you, Chairman.
No, I think you, the Member of Parliament that really made the motion for the all members to consider. I was just giving a report back, which is my obligation. I mean, I had promised the committee that as we go and watch the soccer, we'll interact with the minister and ask the minister to submit the report. So when this meeting starts today, I need to give that clarity because members have clearly said that it's based upon that report that they have to consider the amendments that are being asked upon them to consider. So it's on those basis that I'm giving that report back. I have to do that. There's no way that I can start this meeting without clarifying a matter that is of importance to members of parliament. Because I don't operate on my own. I'm mandated by the committee to say by the portfolio committee to give a report back. So I'm giving that particular report back that I don't have those reports. And it's in the interest of members to give me how to move forward around that particular aspect. That's all I'm doing. I'm really emphasizing a democratic practice that if you are sent out, you go and listen and come back and report back to the portfolio committee. And I cannot report to you in the dark corners. I must report openly so that you should know that the report is not here. The report is important because it gives context to the need for us to be able to establish a commission. The minister promised upfront that we will put up an interim commission, and the interim commission will go into interacting with the stakeholders and come back and provide reports. Now, Parliament has been taken on board in that particular instance. Now, today, it said that Parliament must consider the establishment of of the commission itself. But Parliament has not been given a report of how that process has proceeded. That's where the members are getting itchy about where do they study themselves. So it's not about the commission. It's about how the relationship proceeds between what the ministry knows that has to come back to Parliament and what Parliament is expecting of the ministry to do. So that's the point that we're trying to clarify at this particular moment. And what I hear from Honorable Member Stella says. She says, fair enough, we'd listen to what the Commission is saying, but the difficulty would be to proceed with that particular report, because we have not seen the report at all. And I can't tell a lie and say there is a report, it's in my house. I've got no report in my house. I mean, these are taxpayers. I'm also being paid by taxpayers. So I need to be able to be quite frank and put it up and get the money from what the members of parliament are saying. That's where I'm standing. The details, David, of about how many times have you written to, we made that available. Many don't have that detail now with that, but we have sent quite a number of correspondence to the office of the ministry. But I wouldn't want us to engage, that's what Parliament wouldn't want to engage officials to come and tell us what has happened. The person who is fully responsible for the department is the minister. Let her wait for us to get a report back from her. I mean, I'll express it to her that members are very dissatisfied that they have to proceed on something that they had asked initially, that they have been taken into confidence, not just in confidence, that they have got a responsibility to create a commission, and that report is not enough. I'll raise that particular position. But what I'm saying that members are now saying in this particular moment, that they will take the report of what the commission is saying, but they won't be able to deliver it into the report. They don't know, the two reports have not been presented to them. That's what I want clarity about, that how do we proceed on that, around that one. I can hear what you're saying. You say that, let's wait for the minister until next week. But I must say, until there's confirmation from the office that she's coming, I can't guarantee that she'll be here next week. I don't want to do. She has not there. We've written to her. We're waiting for her confirmation. I don't want to say she'll be here next week. I have written to her. I've asked her. I mean, the secretary said, I don't want to know how she runs the office, but she's the political head of the organization. She's supposed to be able to tell me exactly she can. But I'm just saying that members have made their position clear. The commission must not feel differently about it. But I'm just allowing members of parliament to express their own point of views, because it's important for me to make sure that there is happiness within the committee. And I've been trying my best to make sure that the report, as you go to FIFA World Cup, has to be presented. I know I've sent a message to that we see, and I've sent a message to everybody to say, get the report to come back. If there are issues that we don't have to see, make sure and say so. But let us get the report. The report commission that we have done, both of them are not in front of this portfolio committee of parliament. So just give a few minutes to reflect on it as members of parliament, and I'll take the mandate from them. Don't feel indifferent. It's not affecting you. It's just about the work that has to be done in parliament in a proper way. The executive has to respect parliament, and those are constitutional obligations. If I go against that, I'll be fired myself by the ANC and by everybody in this country, that I've disregarded parliament itself. Can we reflect that? How do we proceed from here? Ndabeni, do you have another? No position.
Except to say I stand by what I propose, that we must hear the presentation from the commission, but then as I propose that we're not going to make deliberations on it. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, you said correctly that the executive must respect the legislature and parliament, but there's no evidence that the minister respects the legislature or parliament. In fact, the converse is true. The evidence is that the minister holds parliament and this committee in complete contempt. Now, when it comes to detail, what I would like to know is, you have written to the minister. Has the minister replied?
I said no, David. If he had replied, I would have given you. That's correct. You know, I think it's most of the correspondence.
That chair makes the situation so much more serious. If the chairperson of a committee in this legislature writes to the minister and the ministry can't even bother to reply, what does that say about the quality of our democracy? This is a big problem, Chair, and I need to sort it up with the minister once and for all. On the question of how to proceed, I think that the commission should indeed committee and we should deliberate on the bill. The commission has come from all over the country at taxpayers' expense, and we should try to make the best use of the time possible.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to concur with Honorable Manny has said, but I would just like to add something else with regard to the ministry. Can you not change, Honorable Chairperson, can you not change your cordial invitation to the minister, in fact, to summon the minister? I mean, we are dealing here with serious business, and it's a bill that needs to be passed. So I think it will be appropriate to summon the minister. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if it comes to that end, I mean, then we have no choice. But I want to urge you that there will be finalization on the meeting for Tuesday before Friday. Because members of Parliament, as you know, sittings are not taking place at the moment. And members of Parliament are flowing all over the country down to Parliament for the meeting. It's a pity that it seems if the minister is on a collision course with members of parliament and with the portfolio committee. That is not in the interest of the South African National Defence Force, and it's really a pity. I don't know what the problem is, but I will also ask you as chairperson of this portfolio committee, in the interest of our National Defence Force, to have a personal discussion with the minister, I don't think we need this collision course. We need, and we all have to get onto a course where we can act in the best interest of the National Defence Force. There are many problems in the NDF. We must solve those problems. And we mustn't see that the minister is actually enhancing further problems as far as this body is concerned. So please, I ask you that there will be finalisation from the minister and MPs being informed timelessly for the meeting next Tuesday. Thank you, James.
I must express that, as you can see, I mean, I've got quite a lot of members here. Members of Parliament think they are very serious, and they take their duties very seriously. That's why they are here. And they want to be respected equally so. And my job is to give that respect. I must say that they respect. That's why they are here in big numbers. And which means they're beyond even the quorum of Parliament. According to the portfolio committee, they are here. So they take every responsibility that they've been given quite seriously. So that's why I thought that it's important for me to express that point of view, that when they say they want the report, they are not looking for collusion with the ministry. But it's upon them as an institution to say to themselves that if you have to move forward, whatever you've committed yourself into, make sure that you keep to that word. The report is very important. Members need to be able to know where it goes, you see. I mean, they need to know what are the weaknesses of the FATF. This report on its own doesn't explain that. I've read the report. It doesn't give context of what the problems are. Now, generally so, they don't want to sit here and few people speak as if they are not members. They want to make good contributions. They respect the taxpayers. You see, that's one of the things that they've been trying to prevail. They respect taxpayers. What they do know is that they have been paid. That's why you find all members of the parties are here. So they also respect the commission, you see. So it's really a responsibility that is left with the ministry to understand that. I've been trying to let them understand that it's important to respect Parliament. It's a constitutional obligation. I've got no other interest. No body, no member here has got any other interest to be in a coalition. We are more interested to make sure that the work that we have been given is a mandate to fulfill. So it's in that context that I thought that we needed to raise and understand that each and every member's contribution comes out of that context, that they take the work very seriously. I will do my best on my side to persuade the minister to know that he has to commit himself and be here on Friday and give me a commitment that he will be here on Tuesday and make the reports available to each and every part of this. Every member of Parliament should be respected and be given the report so that they can see exactly which context are they being expected to endorse the bill itself? Yeah. It's in that context. Members of the commission, as you could hear what the view that is expressed by members of parliament, it's really not about yourself. You have done your work. You are men and women of credibility. We respect you very much so. And we know that you have done a very good job. Your integrity with us is 100%. We don't doubt you. We saw that we needed to clear these things amongst ourselves. I couldn't clear it in your absence. It wouldn't be right of us to talk as if we were gossiping about the commission. So we needed to clarify this matter. That's why we wanted to clear it. Now, members of parliament, they will definitely take your submission. But how much they would deliberate of it, you will understand that they wouldn't even have had the background that. So you see, it was nice. All of us were there when the commission was put together. And the mandate and everything, we all discussed as a collective. But now when it goes to finality, they seem not to come forward and tell us exactly what progress has been made. So that's the only hiccup that we see. But we'll give you and take a balanced view of listening. Those members that are quite in a position to ask questions will ask questions for clarity. It's not the final day of the presentation, but it was an important step for us in the work that we do as a collective, that at least the report that you have submitted on behalf of taxpayers is being presented to all of us, so that we know exactly what is the context of doing this thing. Members of Parliament, we are going to proceed and give over to Judge Bosiale, the chair of the committee, to give us what it is that he thinks should be able to be done around the commission. I hope every member of parliament has got the report of the commission. Do you have it, member? Okay. We don't have a good report. Members of Parliament, you do know the commission. You can see they like you. They came in big numbers today. Yeah. The only left is the women that they have. So please don't stop at them on the gender issue. I know how sensitive you are about the gender, but okay, fine. So we'll leave that to Sierra to give us the presentation. And members will ask questions when they're prepared by it. Thank you, members. Let's kick that, Judge.
Honorable Chair, esteemed members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the media here present, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Honorable Chair, on behalf of the Commission, it always gives us great pleasure to receive invitations from the committee to engage with it in this mammoth task that we have undertaken. However, that's in compliance with the undertaking that we made to you, if you recall, on the 2nd of October 2009, that we regard you as one of the most important stakeholders, and that from time to time we will come back to you and share with you. Whatever progress we have made so that we could receive input from you. It is unfortunate that this meeting started on a rather somber note because of the problems surrounding the report which this commission prepared and handed over to the ministry. I was present in the meeting on the 10th of June 2010, when this issue was raised. And I am acutely aware of the concern among members of the committee with regard to either the inability or the failure by the minister to make those reports available to you. Having departed this date, on the 10th of June 2010, you will recall that I had a telephone conversation with you, in the course whereof you did indicate to me, in no uncertain terms, that you are going to require those two reports to be available to your members when you come to see you on the 21st of July 2010. I wish to recall that I took what you said to me very seriously. And I sought consultation with the minister. And the minister obliged me. I had a meeting with the minister. The minister repeated what Ms. Mania said. And that is correct. That it is not the task of this commission, it is not within the powers of this commission to make those reports available. That's her responsibility. We are accountable to the minister. We did what we had to do. Those reports are in the hands of the minister. I just wanted to dispel any myth that perhaps we are responsible for those reports not being before the committee. We have nothing to hide. We have recorded objectively and impartially what we observed in the course of the investigation. And we have no problem in those reports being made available to you by the minister, should she deem it necessary to do. That was my response to the problem relating to the two reports. Honorable Chair, it has come to my attention, regrettably so, that there appear to be some misunderstanding, some confusion surrounding this bill, which is the subject of this discussion this afternoon. The discussion seemed to center around issues of why do you want a separate dispensation for the search force? Who is responsible for the separate dispensation? Is it going to be the president? Is it going to be the minister? Is it reporting lines and responsibilities? And its relationship with the Public Service Commission? Other commissions. I'm happy to tell you, Honorable Chair in the House, that the reason why we're here is to deal with those misunderstandings. We want to deal with those misconceptions. And I hope at the end of our presentation, we will all be reading from the same book, from the same page, and we'll get your support for this bill, which this commission regards as historic and very important, and be the only vehicle that we can use in addressing the unique requirements of the men and women in uniform. By way of background, you will recall that when we appeared before the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee for the first time on the 30th of October 2009, we had the first terms of reference that had been issued to the Commission. We presented before the committee a draft program of action, a blueprint, which set out our understanding of our tasks, what we are going to do, who we are going to speak with, and what at the end of the day we intended to produce as the Commission. The Commission started with its initial work, and on the 9th of November 2009, a very important, significant event took place when the Commission was finished with reviewed and or amended terms of reference. Those amended terms of reference have been the guiding light for the Commission since then. What we have done is strictly in terms of the amended terms of reference, which reads as follows. The Commission has to advise and make recommendations on a unique service dispensation outside the ambit of the public system. I wish to emphasize, unique service dispensation outside the ambit of the public service. We will explain later why outside the ambit of the public service. Two,
advice on the regulatory framework for the unique service dispensation. This is the exercise that we're doing, advising on the bill that is going to ensure that this dispensation comes into being lawfully and properly. 3, investigate and provide advice on the remuneration and condition of service of members of the South African National Defence Force. In order to engage this level of task, it was decided, proposed that the Commission adopt the following approach. 1, that it makes a recommendation, I emphasize, recommendations on a unique service dispensation for the South African National Defence Force. What were these recommendations supposed to entail? They were supposed to include, 1, the establishment of the permanent National Defence Force Service Commission. That's the subject matter of this discussion this afternoon. Having agreed on the establishment of the National Defence Service Commission, the Commission has further responsibilities to recommend to the Ministry mechanisms and procedures regarding the following. How is the Commission to be appointed? Its terms of reference? What are supposed to be its functions, its staff component, its relationship with the Public Service Commission, its relationship with Parliament, its report responsibilities to the to the President and the Minister, its oversight role over the SANDF in respect of its mandate, and quite importantly, to develop a framework for determining the salaries and conditions of service for members of the South African National Defence Force, which the new permanent National Defence Force Service Commission would be able to adopt, develop, and implement, subject to any changes which they may deem appropriate and appropriate. In his deliberations, the Commission agreed and committed itself to a process that is transparent and that is based on broader consultation with all the stakeholders. In person, therefore, we have so far managed to consult with the following important stakeholders. The Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, popularly known as the Mosenega Commission. We have made inquiries about the mechanisms and procedures followed by other similar institutions, i.e. the SAPS, the intelligence services, to enable us to determine conditions of service within their unique dispensations. We've also conducted a desktop research, including research into the Armed Forces Pay Review Body, which we observed on our visit on the benchmarking mission in the United Kingdom. All this was done with a view to investigating, researching, in order to make ourselves able to make appropriate recommendations to the Ministry. On the 10th of December 2009, the Commission had finished and handed over to the Ministry a draft bill on the Defence Force Service Commission, thereby giving effect to one of the important terms of reference assigned to this commission. We have been advised that the draft bill served before Cabinet on the 24th of March 2010 and subsequently was submitted by the Honourable Minister to Parliament as part of the package of the Defence Amendment Bill. We were present in this House on the 10th of June 2010 with the Department of Defence and the legal advisors to the Defence when they introduced the bill to your House. And we had the privilege of listening to the debate around the bill that went on that day. Amongst others, the Portfolio Committee was also apprised or informed of proposed amendments to the bill, which were subsequently accepted by the State Law Advisors, which we intend
to elucidate and explain fully to the House in the course of this presentation. On the 19th of July, the year 2010, the Commission had the privilege of engaging and having a meeting with the chairperson of the Public Service Commission in its quest to satisfy the undertaking of broader consultation. I now want to deal with the nub of the issue, the permanent National Defense Force Commission. I know the question is inescapable. Why do we want to have a dispensation for the soldiers that is separate from all other dispensations currently existing in the country? For many years, there has been a perception that soldiers are public figures. I wish to say without hesitation that that concept is wrong. Soldiers can never be equated to public servants. They are unique. They belong to a unique profession. They therefore require a unique dispensation specially tailored to address and meet the unique requirements. I have come to accept, in the course of my interaction with this commission, that unlike me, the ordinary citizen who can afford to go home every day after 5 and expect to find hot supper at home, that's not the life of a soldier. The lives are as uncertain as they can be. One of the core and integral part of the conditions, unlike all of us, is the resolve and the willingness to lay the lives down for all of us. No other profession does that. Soldiers belong to that specialized group of people who at any time can be called upon, can be deployed, wherever the need arises. Burundi comes to mind. I wonder whether we have ever stopped as a nation to think what are the consequences on our soldiers of deployment. Not only on the soldiers themselves, but on their families as well. Disruption of family life, being away from your family, wives being left at home, children being left at home. I'm not exposed to those kind of stressful situations. If one looked at the Public Service Commission, you need not be a rocket scientist to see that it is not get up. It will not be able to deal with these nuances, with these subtleties that come into the life of a soldier. Ordinarily, our understanding of a soldier is somebody who puts a uniform and joins the force. But there is more to it than that. The issue of conditions of service of soldiers transcend issues of rank and sense. It's not just a question of raising the salaries. It goes to the morale, it goes to the uniform, it goes to the facilities, it goes to the equipment that they use. You therefore cannot understand the concept conditions of service with regard to soldiers in the same way that you regard it with regard to an ordinary public servant. This, therefore, Honorable Chair, in my view and in the view of the Commission, calls for a separate, unique dispensation, which you will see as I go through the bill with you, will be manned by men and women across the board who have the necessary understanding, knowledge of the unique milieu within which the soldiers work and you have the expertise and the skill and experience to be able to deal with issues that pertain to soldiers. Just by way of illustration, as you're speaking now, the dispensation that is in place for soldiers is in terms of Section 55 of the current Act. Now, immediately you think of an animal called military governing council. There is empirical evidence that since the advent of this institution called the military governing council, it has never worked. It is dysfunctioning. Now, the immediate question is, if it does not work, what other alternative mechanisms do the men in uniform have to address the concerns? In my view, there is a lacuna, there is a gap, which needs to be filled. If we are serious in trying to ensure that we have our soldiers, our force well structured, well managed, well motivated, and well disciplined. And in our view, that alternative mechanism can be no other than a permanent service commission for the members. We, in the course of the task of the commission, have had occasion to visit various bases. And the issue of the commission was discussed with members. And I can disclose, without any fear of contradiction, that the soldiers, the ordinary soldiers, are looking forward to this government giving them a forum where they can articulate their grievances and where they would have the confidence that there will be somebody who will listen to their grievances. I, in the course of preparation of this presentation, I stumbled against a very interesting article which appeared on Thursday, October 8, 2009, in the Star. It's about this commission, and it says the following. The National Defense Force Service Commission has its work cut out for it. Its priority should be to help the force focus on its main purpose. But I prefer the following. And I hope members of this House take this to heart. With the establishment of the National Defense Force Service Commission, the government has finally grasped the basic fact that the armed forces are not just another branch of the public service. The military is a profession, and it makes unique and often harsh demands on its members. The responsibilities and risks inherent to it must be recognized and understood. And that must underline how we treat our military. The primary purpose of the commission is to improve the remuneration, condition of service, something that has been long been needed. It is particularly good that the commission has also been tasked with carrying out an analysis of the purpose, the duties, the responsibilities, the powers, and activities attached to the various positions in the armed forces, and an evaluation and grade of all posts, all those posts. That will be fundamental. It is not enough to understand that the military is a profession different from public service. There are also differences in the military itself, for sure. I think the writer here has graphically captured the reason behind the establishment of the commission. I cannot say it any better than the writer has put it. And the writer is no other than a person called Helmut Roma Hedman. I believe he's an independent defense analyst and specializes in matters related to military affairs. Now, that in a nutshell is the reason why the commission is passionate and unreservedly support and seek the support of the committee in as soon as it is reasonably possible, setting up a permanent Defense for Service Commission to cater for those special and unique needs of the soldiers. I said earlier on that there is some kind of widespread and perhaps often basic misunderstanding of this bill that we are putting before you. One of the serious areas that is seriously misunderstood is this very concept of contingency. I will go so far as to say that even in our interaction with the ordinary soldiers, the red so-called rank and file, I have got a clear impression that everybody seems to think that conditional service means rank and file. My view is that can only be if you look at this concept in a very narrow and parochial sense, which will not be applicable to addressing the unique needs of the soldiers. And that is the reason why in the bill we propose a new definition to the concept conditional service. And you will find it on slide 9 of the presentation. With class 1, we seek an amendment of section 1A of the old Act 42 of 2002. If the amendment is accepted, it will read as follows. Conditions of service include conditions related to the following. Recruitment procedures, advertising and selection criteria. Appointment and appointment process. Job classification and grading of posts. Salaries, allowances and service conditions. Job assignments, working environment and facilities, critically, training and development, performance evaluation systems, promotion, transfer, demotion, disciplinary measures other than dismissals, scarce skills, pay progression, deployment benefits, tools of trade including equipment, accommodation including facilities, and of course any other matters pertaining to conditional service of the men and women in uniform. Now, Honorable Chair and esteemed members of the Commission, you will see by reading this definition that it is much broader and all encompassing. And our view is that it is a composite of all these various factors that really go to make a good soldier. You need to have good accommodation for them, you need to have good recruiting missions, you've got to train them properly, you've got to pay them well, you've got to ensure that there's career development, and in that way, you are likely to come up with a force that every citizen of this country will be proud to associate with. My fellow commissioner has just reminded me to add and the assembly as well, because it becomes part of the bigger assembly. I have already alluded to the fact that if the truth be told, the current dispensation is woefully inadequate. It's virtually non-existent. This bill seeks to bring in a viable alternative. I've already talked about the gap that is there, the lacuna that is there that is to be filled. The following clause seeks to deal with that. The current act as it stands dictates that the minister may not make regulations regarding the remuneration of members of the Defence Force. We have found that to be a very serious impediment. In the scheme of things, of the dispensation that we propose an amendment to the section, and it will read as follows, if it's amended, section 52. The terms and conditions of service of the regular force, as well as conditions and procedures regarding enrollment, appointment, promotion, transfer, and remuneration, will be as prescribed. Now, that section ties up with the next section, and in order to make it easily understandable, I'll immediately go to the next section so that you understand what we seek to achieve. Clause 4 seeks to amend section 55 of the Act, by empowering the Commission to recommend pay, salaries, and entitlements, including allowances, disbursements, and other benefits to the Minister, who may approve these recommendations in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The current section, which we find undesirable, reads as follows. Members of the regular force and the reserve force must receive such pay, salaries, and entitlements, including allowances, disbursements, and other benefits, in respect of their services, training, or duty in terms of this act, as may from time to time to be agreed upon in a military bargaining council. Now, it's common cause. There's no debate about it. The military bargaining council is not functioning. There are various reasons why it's not functioning. One of the reasons is that it envisages the existence of trade unions which qualify in terms of the act to have a certain minimum of membership to qualify to participate in the military bargaining council. We now know that that has not happened. Question is, if we do away with the military bargaining council, what do we put in place? This commission proposes the Permanent Defense Force Service Commission, which will operate in the following manner. I've already alluded to the fact that it's going to be manned by men and women who have the proven track record of ability, of skill, of relevant expertise, who will be supported by a secretariat that will enable them to do research, to review policies, to do local and international benchmarking, to consult with relevant stakeholders, including the Public Service Commission, Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, the Treasury, in order to make sure that whatever recommendations that they make fall within what the budget of accounts can afford. And having done that, then to make recommendations to the Minister about what they think is appropriate condition of service for members of the Defence Force. What is the advantage of this system? The advantage of this system is it is transparent, it is accountable, it is independent, it is impartial, it's consultative. We cannot think of any other better system that we can recommend than the system that we recommend in the bill that we handed over to the Minister. Reference to how the commission is going to work was just by way of demonstration. You will appreciate that matters of that nature normally appear in the rules and regulations, which are going to be brought into being so that they have the commission to know how to go about the business. There is a clause that deals with that later on in our presentation. Clause 4, I've already dealt with this clause in particular, but perhaps just to emphasize certain aspects that may be of concern to members of this House is, how do we appoint members of the Commission? The bill envisages that the Minister will, by publication in two national newspapers, call for nominations. People who believe that they are fit and proper to become members of the Commission. The Minister will set up a nomination committee which will receive the various applications submitted by people who think that they will qualify as members of the Commission. This nomination committee will comprise broadly of men and women in this country who have the necessary expertise and skills to be able to objectively do the proper shortlisting of people who have applied. It is this nomination committee which will be responsible for the shortlisting of names that will submit to the Minister, from which the Minister will select the people to serve in this committee. Once again, I want to emphasize the element of independence, of impartiality, insofar as the nomination committee is concerned, which is responsible for the selection of people to be appointed as commissioners. Section 62C deals with recommendations to the ministry by the nomination committee, as I've said out. And then, of course, we've got Section 62D and Section 62E, which broadly deals with qualifications of people to be appointed as commissioners and what these qualifications are there for people who cannot serve in this commission. They are self-explanatory, as you can see, that I should waste more time on that. Section 62F and Section 62G. Section 62F deals with the meetings of the commission, how often the commission is going to hold meetings, the appointment of the chairperson and the chairperson, the reporting line, and when the commission is supposed to submit its report to the ministry, when after the ministry will submit the report to the cabinet. Now, as a matter of coincidence, this is the situation that we are dealing with regards to the two outstanding reports, the reporting line. This commission proposes that the proper way, mechanism of this commission reporting, because it's a commission appointed by the ministry, it is directly accountable to the minister, they will have to submit that report to the minister will receive the report, table it before cabinet, the cabinet will discuss that report, and a decision will be taken at that level, which is outside the ambit of the power of the commission, as to what is the fate of that report. Section 62I speaks for itself. Of course, the commission will need the secretarial support in terms of logistics, secretarial work to be able to perform its task efficiently. And this is the responsibility of the minister to ensure that the commission has sufficient secretarial support. Critical issue, the question of the budget for the commission. It follows that because this commission is a commission relating to the military, the Department of Defense will have to be liable for the expenses of the commission. As I'm addressing you now, the commission is busy with that exercise. We have assigned people to do the costing so that at the end of the day, the committee knows exactly what this means in terms of financial commitment and implications on the budget of the defense. The next clause is the clause where I want to spend a bit of time and explain few issues. I alluded to the question of the debate between who takes ultimate responsibility of this commission. Is it the minister? Is it the president? I was present in this house the last time when the issue was debated. You will probably recall that in the initial bill that we submitted, we had recommended that the minister should be responsible for this commission and that all reporting should be to the minister. We are aware of the fact that there is a school of thought which says it should be the president and not the minister, or the president in consultation with the minister. The view of this commission is that that is not tenable, it's untenable. You are likely to find ourselves in a very embarrassing situation. This commission is not a creature of the Constitution. It's a ministerial commission. All things being equal, the minister is the political head responsible for this defense. Therefore, the minister must take responsibility for the commission.
But that even more important consideration than that. If you look at the clause that deals with the dissolution of the commission and the suspension of the commission and appointment of the administrator, I can explain this conundrum by giving you the following example. If I were, in my capacity as a judge, accept appointment as the permanent commission, the permanent chairperson of this commission, and therefore be paid as a permanent chairperson of this commission, and for some reason the president feels that he's not happy with my performance, and he terminates my employment as the chairperson of the commission, and I happen to feel that the president acted where he did not have just cause to terminate my employment, who do I sue? If you put the president there, who do I sue? I have to sue the president. Question is that what you want to see? Let me remind you, do we want to see the situation that we saw years ago when SAFU dragged the then President Nelson Mandela to court as a witness? Are we not overexposing our president? Our view is it is in compliance with the Constitution, separation of powers, that the responsibility for this commission should stop where it's supposed to stop with the minister. And we should not overbear the office of the president with issues that belong to the minister. It is therefore in that context that you see with regard to Section 62 and onwards, we strongly recommend that we should take out the president and substitute the president with the minister. I recall a concern was raised by one of the honorable members of the House on the 10th of June, 2010, to the following effect. I'm not pretending to be quoting that member, it is not verbal, but something to this effect. What if the minister decides to act arbitrarily? How do we control the minister? The response was there are sufficient mechanisms within the Act to deal with this kind of situation. And I think that's a sufficient response. There are sufficient mechanisms to deal with that particular eventuality. Should the minister decide to act arbitrarily or irresponsibly? But I've never heard in my lifetime the ministers act irresponsibly, because they know that they're accountable to cabinet. Can I then deal with the question of functions of the commission? I want to believe that all of the members of this House are interested to know what this animal that you talk about is going to do. That you find on slide number 16, and that deals with section 62B1. It is envisaged that the commission that we're going to set up will, on an annual basis, make recommendations to the minister on improvements of salaries and service benefits. B will make recommendations to the minister on policies in respect of conditional service. C will promote measures and set standards to ensure effective and efficient implementation of policies and make recommendations to the minister. For purposes of making these recommendations, the commission will have to do the following, undertake the following. It will have to inquire into or conduct research on conditional service, both locally and internationally. This includes doing benchmarking. The commission will have to review policies, will have to evaluate and monitor implementation of such policies, will have to consult with the necessary stakeholders, SECDEF, CSANDEF, and any other interested person or body on conditional service and any other matter falling within the purview
of its functions. Quite importantly, the Commission will consider any representation received by the Commission in the course of its investigation. And perhaps even more importantly, the Commission will have to consult with the National Treasury before it makes any recommendations with regard to issues of money that may have an impact on the defense budget to ensure that we remain within the budget. The Commission will, amongst others again, as I already alluded to, consider the rank structure of the defense force, affordability of the different levels of remuneration of the defense force, consider current principles and levels of remuneration in the public service generally, so that we don't go out of line with what is prevailing in the country, take into account inflationary increases, and quite importantly, for the credibility of this commission, we will have to ensure that this commission, there is no undue interference with this commission. It is left to be able to perform its functions impartially, without bias, fear, or prejudice, so that people can have confidence in the commission. In execution of its functions, the commission may, in consultation with the minister, call upon any member of SANDF or DOD employee to assist it in its execution of its functions. And such person is obliged to assist the commission. Having gone through that investigation, that exercise, that research, make recommendations, the bus now stops with the minister, who is the political head of the department, to determine the conditional service of members of the defense force. Having considered the detailed recommendations made by the commission to her in consultation with the Minister of Finance, the motivation is very simple, that it will be foolhardy for the minister to proceed to adopt recommendations of the commission which have financial implications without having cleared that up with the person who is responsible for finances, that is the Minister of Finance. So we envisage that there will be proper consultations within the two ministers. I have already alluded to the manner of appointment of the commission and the condition of this. Suffice to say that the idea is to have a process that is credible, that is open, that is transparent. There will be publications, invitations in two national newspapers and in the government that are broadly distributed, inviting people to submit the applications to be members of the commission. As I've said already, the minister will create a special nomination committee which will have the task of going through all those applications and come up with those that they think are the best and create a shortlist. The minister will have to appoint the commissioners from the shortlist of names submitted to him by the nomination committee. Section 62 talks about the proven experience, the knowledge and experience of the candidate to be appointed. I've already dealt with that.
But I still want you to go to page 29.
Page 29.
In the document that you sent to us. It's about reporting.
It's about
reporting.
Reporting.
Okay. You say a report must not contain confidential information. That will be determined at the national security. I want you to explain yourself. Just take us through this. Give us a sense. Why do you say that? What are your problems?
This is the understanding of the commission. In the course of investigating, receiving information, consulting with various people, it is possible that information that might tend to be inimical to national security might come into the possession of the Commission. The Commission is obliged to report, to let that information be contained in its report. But we do understand that the Cabinet Parliament has a responsibility to ensure that national security is not compromised. In their wisdom, they may decide to edit the report and have those portions of the report which they think pose a danger to national security removed from the report. The Bishop would like to, with our permission.
Yes, thank you. I think that, Honourable Chair, that anticipates number four, which is talking about the Gaza thing. I don't, the intention there is not to prevent information coming to Parliament or to Cabinet, but it is anticipating that by the time it goes to Gaza thing, which is the next clause, whatever information is detrimental, obviously, will go into the Gaza thing.
And then it's the corrected say, because honestly, to say that we cannot be privileged to matters that concern national security wouldn't be right as members of parliament to go to this committee. We have a right to know each and everything that would be of importance with regards to national security. But then going to the public, I understand. Because if it means the commission has come to report to us as the members of the committee, it would mean that we have to request that the meeting be a closed one. Because we know what media will be here. We have a right at least to have access to that report.
You know that if I deal with elements of suspicion, Commerce Judge.
Yes.
Yeah. You see the scenario that started this meeting, that the nervousness members of Parliament would have. That even as of now, they can't get the report. Maybe that report is about national security. So, you know, they get suspicious more than now. You are closing them door that they are out that way. One, you want to give it the minister. Two, you want to existing a report about their own salary. You want that to be a national security issue. You see, that's the suspicions that are going to be cast around that type of insertion. Like, what does it mean? I know other members have known for years. The security cluster has not been able to define what is a national security. So to ask the commission to venture into that field, we are opening up a road within the context of what we know, that national security has not been defined. So you are clearly saying to us, if you have to deal with issues of promotion, that's national security. I think the commission would have to come and be more clear around that issue. But if you have finished that, you see, it's not a conclusive today where we are concluding. I think this presentation gives us an opportunity to think more about the issues that you have raised. As I said always, that you are men of integrity. You have at least given us a sense of exactly what the challenges that are to confront with. Members of Parliament, can I leave it in your capable hands? I know you hijacked my chairpersonship, David. Yes, but do you still want to do some clarification to yourself or not? If not, I'll keep you in the meantime. Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Run off. If you look at page 22, I just wish to bring this to the attention of honourable members. That in line with the presentation, where the word president appears, we recommend that it should be replaced with the minister. I've given a motivation where we do this. That should not mislead you. Now, if I don't know whether your slide has got the last page where we're trying to show you a diagrammatic representation of and functions of how this whole system is going to flow.
doesn't have that.
I'll ask him to put on the screen so that
now you could add it up, Sarge. It's important.
Yes.
But he is important, but he does have limitations.
With your permission, Chair, I ask my deputy to take you through it and explain to you.
Chairperson, thank you. Just to start at the top, and unfortunately, none of us seem to have a point that I think we'll be able to say, but just to start at the top, you see at the top there, raises the question of Parliament and then the issue of the President of the Republic as a Commander-in-Chief, and I think one needs to look at that nexus between the legislature and the President as the Chief of the Executive. He's also the Commander-in-Chief of the Defence Force. Under Parliament, you also have the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, who has their interaction with the Minister of Defence. You have the various committees in Parliament and their interaction with the Minister. Under the Minister, you have the Council on Defence, which is seen as the coordinating body where the minister consults with the soldiers and the defense secretariat. They have a council on defense which considers all defense matters and is then in a position to take decisions around that. On the other side, side by side, you have the Public Service Commission, which currently makes input to the functioning of defense and where the minister currently gets guidelines. And what is to be created is a National Defence Force Service Commission in lieu of a Public Service Commission, and the Honourable Judge has explained why we think it needs to be different from the public service because of the uniqueness of the Defence Force, that you have the National Defence Force Service Commission, which will then make recommendations to the minister, but at the same time, that commission will also take views from the Public Service Commission, understand what it is that is happening in the public service, and where necessary, take the necessary inputs, but then, in addition to that, provide for the uniqueness of the Defence Force. And there are continuous discussions between the commission and the minister, and also with the Plenary Defence Staff Council, which comprises of both the Secretariat and the Defence Command Council jointly. And there will be ongoing consultation jointly with the Defence Staff Council, with the Military Command Council and the Defence Secretariat, which go on. In addition to that, we also have on the bottom right, the external stakeholders, which may make any input. And we need to understand, Honorable Chairperson, that we also will receive input, or the Defence Force Service Commission will receive input from the SANDF, the members and families of the Defence Force, so that they can make representations to the Commission, so they can consider all the views
from all interested parties, and on the basis of all these inputs that it gets from the various stakeholders, what is also not shown there is the interaction with the National Treasury, the Ministry of Finance, and any other stakeholders, so that it can then come up with recommendations as to service conditions in its broad sense, so that it will make recommendations on these, which can then be taken up by the Department of Defense for implementation. Okay, and I think on the bottom left you see the various structures of the Military Command Council, the Secretariat Council, and then the various divisions within the DoD itself and the military and substructure. But this is just to give a high level representation of these issues and not necessarily the procedural issues which I can also be looked at. Thank you.
Honorable Member, can you give the opportunity?
I have a request that the Commission has mandated me to put through to the committee for resolution. We have been advised that henceforth there will be public hearings taking place with regard to the bill. Two problems that arise is that we are dealing with three things in one bill. Now, as it has come out in this debate, there's a lot of work, a lot of debate to go on regarding this bill regarding the commission. We find the system of having the three bills together more cumbersome and confusing. We think it will contribute to easier understanding if this bill were to be separated from the other two bills, which it appears to us have no complexities. We don't understand why the two bills should be delayed by this bill, which must still take some time in our attempt to try to explain it to all the stakeholders what is it that we intend to do. So our request is if they could be separated, it would make our task very easy. Two, you are probably aware that the commission is scheduled to be leaving this country on Saturday on another international bank market mission to the USA, which therefore makes it pretty difficult for the Commission to be able to honor its appointment with regard to the public hearings. If the two bills are separated, we request that we be excused from the public hearings with regard to the bill relating to the reserves and the issue of the mandate because we have nothing to do with it. And as soon as we come back, we'll attend to that part of the bill that pertains to the interim commission. Those are the two requests that I wanted to put through to the committee through you.
At this moment, Judge, the Commission, and out of experience, I'll just think as I think as I sit here, unless you want to delay the bill. But that process would then call upon the starting of the process itself. That can have implications for you to have delayed the bill yourself. Parliament would. We are ready to proceed and help you to. So it's already in the processes of Parliament. So if we separate, it's not our responsibility, but we would have to consult with the Speaker and everybody. It will cost you to have stalled the process yourself without our knowledge. We don't want to interfere with the process. We are quite interested, but if the Ministry feels like that, the executive, they definitely know that we have to speak to the leader of government, and the leader of government consult with the Speaker and take the decision at that level. To do anything that will stall the bill should not be coming back to the portfolio committee. It has to be done at that particular level. I don't want to open another discussion around that area now. Just be patient. I'm just trying to. Look, I've been watching you, and I've been smiling with you. I don't know what's so difficult in today. You see, my friend, it's not that I'm trying to think through, also to think that what do we do with that type of question. I'll leave it to members of parliament to think through the process, but I'm just saying if you want to stop the bill, don't start another process. You see. But if you think it will work, say that. But I mean, it's not for you to consider it now. You've put a proposition, we'll consider it. Yeah. But this one's of holidays and everything, that is really about managing of the work. Yeah, I'll manage it far better that way. Honorable members, you come back there, but can I give David? You want to respond? Okay, you want to respond? Let me start with Mazir and I'll come back. Okay, Master Mazir?
Yeah, no, Chairperson, I was saying you are denying us the privilege to go to the USA. Possibly the Commission would want to take the portfolio committee with them and we'll discuss the deal in the place.
Mazir, don't invite yourself when you've not been invited. I'm clear what I've heard here. Don't smuggle yourself in, Mazir, please. Man. I know you. You've just been on a long holiday now on FIFA. Don't start another one. Tato Khornabad.
Chairperson, now I just want, on a point of clarity, and I'm afraid that I'm asking the question, but I was absent from a couple of meetings of the Commission. What time are the Commission coming back from the United States? So I'm asking that, Chairperson. I'm a bit worried that if we make the two separate bills, we're going to delay the whole process. Rather than we, as a committee, can consider postponing the public hearings, because I don't know whether there's been an advertisement already. Has it been done already? Okay, that makes a problem. What is the time the people will be back from the United States?
No, you see, as I was saying, that you could either leave it to us to administer and manage it more better, give you an opportunity and allow hearings that are going to have direct implication on the National Commission, so that when you are there, you could hear what people are saying. But we don't want your comments around that area itself. You don't want to go into a final debate about that. Also, as I said earlier, we do need those two reports, you see, because it would have influence. So we can't go into those two reports in your absence, you see. So it's important that we give you an opportunity to be here. Now that we have put it in front of the whole portfolio committee, it's quite clear with the relationship that we have with you, that we won't be arrogant and aggressive and say, no, you must be here by what force. We'll have to consider and give you an opportunity. When you're back, you consider all those things. While we work out the detail of the report between ourselves and the ministry, then that won't delay the bill, you see. But if you want to separate and do everything, you are going to create a problem for yourself, and it is going to delay the bill itself. And I don't think from the good heart of yours, then you would want us to delay the bill. So we'll consider that. We'll manage it better from our side to make sure that we give the Commission an opportunity to go and come back, so that we could be able to go into the details. If that will be making you happy, we'll do that in that way. Members, I'll comment after. Do you want to say something, Maynard? No, we'll go to, we're past that one now. My ruling is that we'll manage it differently from the office to allow public hearings that are going to have implications for the Commission. We'll have delayed a little bit. We'll proceed with our work. Those that are dealing with military, with the reserve force and the military command, we'll take them up and see if we can finalize around those ones, and then give you an opportunity to come and report and listen to the presentations that would have been given. Because also the unions, I think, would have interest to come and express their own point of views about the military bargaining council, what is going on. So, but you need to be around yourself, you see. Yeah. We'll run it in that particular way. Okay. So you can go into other issues now. That's the opportunity I'm giving to you now. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. As part of the background statement on page 6, you make of the presentation. You make one of your challenges is to make recommendations about how the Commission relates to Parliament. One of the things that surprises me about the bill and your recommendations is that you envisage a very limited role for Parliament. For example, in the appointment of the Commission, you claim that the process would be independent, but there's no role in the appointment process for Parliament. That's one example. Another example, when we deal with accountability, the Commission, you say, is accountable and reports to the Minister, but is not accountable to Parliament. It seems to me that the concept that you used with respect, Judge, was a very executive concept, and that you envisaged a very limited role for Parliament in respect of appointing, monitoring and holding the Commission to account. I'd like you to perhaps comment on that. I see that as a weakness that we are going to have to remedy. Thank you.
Another member, don't worry, Dad, I'm still telling. No, don't worry, Dad. You'll be fine, I'll give you an opportunity. You see, the other aspect that worries me, Commission, I don't know, I just want you to comment. You see the way you write that organogram. That presents a problem. You see, Parliament is not equal to the presidency. And the commander-in-chief is the presidency. It's not the individual. So how do you explain that? You see, in narrating the story and talking of organogram, there should be recognition of the constitution. What is the guide from the constitution? So at that level, Parliament is equal to the executive, not to the commander-in-chief. So if you say the organogram in the way you're putting it to us, I want to learn something, that are we equal to each other there? Is it what you are presenting to us? Because that becomes very problematic. We must never start on the wrong footing. We must be able to say to ourselves that what does the constitution say? We are equal to the executive, we are equal to the judiciary, not to the commander-in-chief. And the presidency is an office. You see, the one thing that we were questioning yesterday about is also to create a legislation that is based on individuals. We were very wary as parliamentarians about that, because the history of Parliament is that if you do legislation based on ministers or the minister himself, you run into problems. When that minister is, the other minister comes around. And then you are forced as Parliament to restart the legislation based on the notion that the minister's views are different from the other minister. Now, how much are you recognizing that in the infrastructure that they're asking us to look into? Because it's very much important that in law we don't do this. Is what we're asking yesterday. Are you asking us to legislate? You see, and the question is asking, are you saying to us that let's do a law to help one particular individual, the minister, and we ignore all other creations that have been created by this constitution and by the engagement in Parliament? Give us a sense, Commission, that is it what you want us to achieve? Because even the creation of a commission or a committee that you might appoint, we don't mention Parliament. It's all about the minister, the president, We've got nothing. As I said from the start, these members got no view, they've got nothing against the minister, but they want to create a law that is going to be quite viable and assist them to consolidate the democracy that they've been fighting for and defend it. Do you think, in the way you're motivated, Judge, that line that the minister should be and the commission should be about the minister? You see, the one part that we must take note of, that budgeting processes are changing in Parliament. The finance, the treasury, that's not on its own. We've got the money bill here in Parliament. And in a year or two, members of Parliament are going to hold on to that money bill. Because it gives them power in Parliament to determine budgets of different departments and get departments to account to them in a far better system. Now, if you create a situation where Parliament gets ignored, even in the budget process, you're putting yourself in a disadvantage. Because we are concerned about the executives and the ministries to remain accountable to Parliament, even through the budgets that they're getting. So if you could take note of that, don't put yourself outside that system, or if that system is created, where ministers and the treasury, there's nothing they can resolve without parliament being involved, even in the budget processes, that can be a danger to how we run the democratic practices in South Africa, because parliament and the executive would have to have a better relationship. And that money will process. I know members of parliament how they're feeling in the creation of that particular money bill. And we don't want to create a commission at all just by where we, the money of the taxpayers, we don't know how they're getting spent. You see, because the moment the commission gets paid back to the defense budget, we have to know how we're going to be able to hold them responsible, you see. Besides the minister, we also want to get you to come and account. But in our chronograph, you are equally saying that you're equal. You are not advisors of the ministers. That's not how you, there are advisors, ministers get and be able to do, but the commission gets created through law so that it has to remain a little bit accountable to parliament. So its own budget. So that you see, but if you do budget, we have to compare you against what is happening in the border. And if you spend too much and sleep in good hotels, how are we going to get hold of you? We need to hold you, you see. And that is what the challenge is going to be around this particular area. We can't leave you, good gentlemen and women, to escape the eyesight of parliament. We need to have you under our eye. But I'll leave you just, if there's no other member would want to comment. Or, Dr. Marcy, honorable.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Unless this organogram is properly interpreted to us, there are a number of areas which raises some questions. For one, Chairperson, if you look at the Joint Standing Committee and the Portfolio Committee, it appears in the organogram that the Joint Standing Committee is the higher committee than the Portfolio Committee. And in my understanding, they are parallel. There is no committee that is above the other one, except to say that the accounting committee in this respect is the portfolio committee. It's not the joint. There are other areas, of course, that one need to understand well. In terms of how this organogram is structured, I'm not able to interrogate it properly now, but I want the commission to go through this organogram with different stakeholders and also within the Department of Defense to see if they are correct in placing different responsibilities on the organogram.
I've taken note of two commissioners who want to comment. I'll give you an opportunity. Can I just take one of my honorable members? I'll give you an opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 10, with regard to conditions of service, I just wanted to ask the commission with regard to relationships with trade unions, whether the commission should not explicitly put that into the list. Because as you described in the background, that this, there's some uniqueness about the commission and the profession, the military profession. So in order not for us to leave gaps, but to be explicit. Thank you.
Any other member?
Thank you, Chairperson. The Commission can answer that one. But I think on that same page 17, the Honourable Member is asserting, I think what we can do there is include, because it consults, just get to the relevant page.
He was on page 10.
Okay, I see on page 10. Okay, I misinterpreted that page 17. But I can say that page 17, the functions of the commission. Number four, it says consult the SECDEF, the chief of the SNDF, and any other interested person or body. That may be that we as the committee of Vice said we're not going to deliberate on it, just include the reserve force council there in the light of section 48 of the Defence Act, where there is obligation it must consult.
Mr. Mazil, Honourable, you have raised a very important point in relation to the organogram, that the Commission would have to consider overall organogram of the SNDF as you do this organogram. You see, when you deal with issues of review policy, you are saying to us that the Secretary of Defence, or so that responsibility has not been given to them. So, would want to get more clarity and an intensive engagement according to responsibilities given to the Secretariat of Defense, Chief of Defense. You know, we've got the military of veterans now, you see. So this team for us has to speak to all those responsibilities. We don't want you to come back here over a year and say we can't function because so and so think that we have taken so and so's responsibility away, you see. We would want to resolve the matter quite at an early stage. If we have to create law, we have to create law, besides asking the regulations to resolve a particular matter. But I'll leave the defense commission to speak to the matter. Tatu Fundis, it's your turn. I'm sorry. You wanted to say again something? Tatu Honor, you don't want to say anything. Okay.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member of the Commission. We appreciate the opportunity to engage with you and hear your opinion on this draft. I was anxious when it was said that you would hear it but not engage because indeed we came here because we wanted to make sure that we have a sense of how the legislature and so I'm grateful for the engagement, however limited it could be. The matter of the organogram, we wouldn't have used the word organogram at all, because that was not the intention. It was simply just listing the areas of engagement that we believe would be necessary. And I think that it simply doesn't qualify for the word organogram. But I believe that in the light of the conversation clearly that is confusion and that should be necessary to actually work on it. This was not what was intended here. So we appreciate the feedback and we will seek to engage in that. In fact, I might at the pain of a possible rebuff from my colleague, I should say that previously there was in the earlier draft, there was no mention of the Joint Standing Committee at all. So if you see it the way it is, it seems there was only space available in that at that moment. Said, oh, yes, of course, we have to include that report. So there was no intention. So it was no, there was no intention to put any measure of precedence that this is higher than the other. That was not the intention at all. So I'd like to assure the committee that that was not the intention. I think we would need to think a little bit more and gain more of the experience of the committee in the thinking, because when it comes to the relationship with parents, in terms of the formation process of the commission, as well as the reporting process of the commission, there seems to be a variety of schools of thought.
Thank you very much.
And therefore the matter does need to be. If you look at a similar structure created for the intelligence service, the appointment is done by the minister. The reporting goes to the minister. And with that precedent, we wouldn't have thought that we should recommend that Parliament actually appoint as it opposed, for example, to a structure such as the Public Service Commission or the Chapter 9 institution. So our view was that this is a lower level structure which is actually also overseen by the Public Service Commission, which then reports parliamentary. So we had, if you like, we saw this more as an internal infrastructure that meets out the mechanisms of function within the department, within the defense force. We don't have a precedent for an internal infrastructural commission such as this one. Maybe the word commission might well be the issue. But I think that it being part of an infrastructure for overall smoothing out the operations within the system, it would be, in my view, too much for it to come directly to Parliament and also to be appointed by Parliament. I think that there would be a measure of confusion. But this is just one opinion. So it does need some engagement, but I think there is no intention on the part of the recommendations of the Commission to get away from Parliament or undermine Parliament. It is simply to say, if this is to improve the infrastructure and the systems within the Department and within the Defence Force, and make sure that there is some measure of impartiality in dealing with the issues inside of that, then that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm partly covered by what my fellow commissioner said. What I really wanted to emphasize also is that this was not intended to be an organogram in the sense of an organogram. We felt that it is necessary to show where we fit in and how the flow of our functions. That was the intention, not really to show an organogram per se. So we need to improve that because it is important, as you can see on the side of where the commission is placed. We have there quoted the sections and issues of accountability and reporting and the line of flow. That's what we wanted to emphasize, how we execute our functions. With whom do we interact in doing that? That was intended to be that. But then, of course, I mean, it has on the other side the characteristics of an organogram, and I think that confuses things. We didn't even label it, but I think it's a hybrid intended to show really the relationships that we have, the flow of the execution of our function. I thought just.
See, the commission says that it's the SNDF is unique. That's what the commission says. So you are a full house. So even if you create a commission, it does have implications for other cities. And if we act as if we don't understand that in parliament, it might create problems. So if you deal with issues of promotion, of promoting soldiers, that the Chief of Defense has control over them. We need to understand it's not going to create tension. And who has, I know the minister has regulated that, but the law, where we are situated, we need to be able to see how our money is functioning there. And that is the implication. It's got budgetary effects. That's why the commission can undermine itself. And think that it's just a mere commission like advisors. Advisors, we don't have problems with them. They can come and go. But the commission is going to be a fully fledged functioning body, which has got a lot of responsibilities that members of Parliament. parliament or any other person is a citizen. You see, they directly have that implication of what the Constitution provides, or the Bill of Rights, about the rights of individuals. Now, that parliament has to protect. It can't give it to some body somewhere there. Parliament, one of the obligations and responsibilities we have is to defend individuals. Now, the hard part of life, they vote for us and they go. So if ever they are fully responsible beyond soldiers, they will come and meet with members of parliament wherever and say, I never get promoted. Because they know that it's been handled by a commission, you know. But then somebody's life has been taken away. But I'm saying that it's a challenge that Sukrata says of us debating that matter. Now, in the processes of parliament, what is going to happen at the end of the day is we'll take public hearings from different people. And the way you are presenting, we then all come back together before we finalize the bill, that we take an aggressive debate amongst ourselves here to see that where do we differ on opinion and what we say to each other, out of experience. And then the bill will be finalized after we've taken an open discussion with you about what we have feared and what we think should happen. I don't think members of parliament will claim that they have got deeper knowledge or what is open. We would like to exchange the views before we consolidate the bill into becoming a final product of a collective within the parliamentary institution. That's why the report plays a very important role for members of parliament, because it feeds information to them to understand the organogram and the motivations that they're providing to us. But we will sort that one out. But what I'm saying is that we will all hear what the public says, and we'll let you know, and then after that we'll all come to a collective discussion, and then take a final decision as members of parliament. But that's our responsibility to finalize. But we won't finalize that without a discussion that is quite frank and open about how do we understand and whose powers are we taking away. You see, the PFMA also comes in. But the PFMA is given responsibility to the Secretary of Defense to be the accounting officer. Now, when you look at the organogram, she's disappearing. So it becomes very much important that we look into that responsibility. People must not disappear just because we're creating a law. And the next thing, they find themselves not having any responsibility. So all those laws would have to be considered before we come to the finality of the document itself. Honorable members, if you don't have any other questions, I'll conclude this session today and we'll take note of what the members have expressed, and we'll see each other next Tuesday. That's when we'll see each other. You'll be gone. We'll be left with that responsibility. But thank you very much, members. And thank you, the Commission, for coming along. Thank you for all. Okay.